speaker today is Shannon Mace Heller. Shannon is the Public Health Policy and Planning Manager for the Philadelphia Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services. Additionally, Shannon works with the Health Education and Legal Assistance Project, a medical legal partnership, as a part-time public health law consultant. Shannon's roles and responsibilities include analyzing and preparing for the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, leading public health efforts to reduce disparities in care, and addressing policy matters impacting public health. Shannon holds a law degree and a Master of Public Health degree and resides in Philadelphia. And Shannon will be speaking on medical legal partnership, innovative collaboration in a new healthcare environment. Please let's welcome Shannon Mace.
Hello, everyone. I have no disclosures. I have no conflict. We're getting late into the conference now, right? Thank you all for hanging out until the last day and the last presentation of this session. We all appreciate it. So I'm going to talk about medical legal partnership. How many folks in the room have heard of this model? Okay, wow, that's great. So most of you will know that the model was actually born here in Boston. For the few of you who might not be familiar with medical legal partnership, it's a new way to deliver care that actually integrates attorneys as part of the healthcare team. So the first case that brought about the MLP model was by a pediatrician, Dr. Barry Zuckerman, at Boston Medical Center. And he had a child patient who had asthma, and the family kept coming back to him with recurrent asthma attacks and problems. And Dr. Zuckerman realized, there's no prescription that I could write to help this kid get better because his housing situation is so bad. So the root cause of the child's problem was actually a landlord-tenant issue in which the landlord was refusing to make repairs to the family's apartment. So Dr. Zuckerman took it upon himself to hire an attorney to represent the family in this manner. Once the housing got better, the kid's health got better, right? So that's the basis of medical legal partnership. Since that inaugural case, the model has really proliferated nationwide. So right now, I believe there's about 225 healthcare institutions that have medical legal partnerships on site. And while every MLP is unique, they serve unique populations, they're designed differently, all MLPs share three common goals. And the first is to deliver legal assistance in order to improve health, so that's the direct legal assistance part. The second is to really transform the way that health and legal care are delivered in this country. So there is a big emphasis on education and training and collaboration within these models. And the third goal is really to impact system policy change. So bringing together healthcare and legal expertise to advocate for better policies to impact the community and improve community health. We are in a historic time with healthcare delivery, with the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. A lot of things are changing. We're moving toward having a more accountable care system, like Tara just talked about. And there's a lot of opportunities available for innovative partnerships like medical legal partnerships. So most of us are probably familiar with patient-centered medical homes, health home models, accountable care organizations, which we just heard about. There has been a set of quality measures designed. There's more emphasis on information technology. We're really at a pivotal time to design and take advantage of some of these opportunities that the Affordable Care Act are presenting to show the value of legal services and the impact that it has on health. Additionally, we know that there's a much greater focus on social determinants of health and the root causes of health, which are what MLP are all about, right? That's what they're addressing. So just to give you an idea of what this might look like within a health home environment, the person is at the center of a team of providers. It might be mental health, substance use treatment, primary care, and then the addition of an attorney. Everyone likes graphs, right? Okay. So I'm going to talk about the medical legal partnership that I work with, and our lovely moderator, Marty Romney, also works with as one of our evaluators. It's Health Education and Legal Assistance Project, a medical legal partnership, HELP MLP for short. We are a partnership with Crozier Keystone Healthy Start and Crozier Keystone Nurse Family Partnership, two public health programs that are addressing disparities with maternal and infant care. So Healthy Start and Nurse Family Partnership focus on pregnant women and moms with children up to 2 years old. And they provide, Nurse Family Partnership provides a home visiting program with a nurse. And Healthy Start is a connection to many social services. And the third partner is Widener University School of Law. Our project was one of three that received demonstration funding from the federal government, and we're entering our fourth year. So the way that our project works, there is a formal referral process, but our attorneys are fully integrated on site within the Healthy Start and Nurse Family Partnership offices. So we have two full-time attorneys and one part-time attorney, and they fit right alongside the Healthy Start case managers and social workers. So there's really an open door policy, right? So there's a lot of information sharing. There's a lot of bi-directional information sharing. There's a lot of on-the-spot case consultation. However, the formal referral process really starts with a heavy emphasis on education and training. So the attorneys conduct just about monthly trainings with the healthcare and social service staff to help them better identify unmet legal needs, to help them better advocate on behalf of their clients without a formal representation from an attorney. So there's a mix of both how-to referral and substantive legal training on topics like disability, public benefits, housing, domestic violence, etc. Every time a new Healthy Start client comes on board, they're screened for unmet legal needs, which I'm going to talk about next. If a person is screened as having an unmet legal need, they're formally referred to an attorney. The attorney contacts that person, gets the retainer signed, follows up with them within, 24 hours after getting the referral, and then starts working on their case. And a very important last piece of the puzzle is with a client's permission, we follow up about 3 to 4 weeks after to conduct a program evaluation with them to measure the impact that the legal services had on individuals. So our project uses what's known as the iHealth Legal Screening Tool, and this was developed by the National Center for Medical Legal Partnership, and it's available on their site, and I could give that information to everyone. And we have fully integrated the screening tool into the electronic database that the Healthy Start staff uses. So it's right there in front of them, similar to an electronic health record. And those questions are asking about needs within income supports, housing, education, legal or immigration status, and then personal and family stability, which would get at things like domestic violence, divorce, custody, etc. Like I said, a very important piece of our puzzle is measuring what we're doing. We know this is important for sustainability and funding, but also just in general for quality assurance. So we partnered with faculty at Thomas Jefferson University, Marty is one of those faculty, and we designed an evaluation protocol in which we collect information from both program participants and staff. With program participants, we're calling them about 3 to 4 weeks after their cases have closed, and we're measuring things like satisfaction, stress, health, and self-efficacy. For our last grant period, we had 21 participants had closed cases at the time data was collected, and 13 completed the follow-up interviews. Similarly, with staff, we want to touch base with them to see how this project is really transforming how those services are delivered and whether it's working or not. So we conduct pre- and post-tests with each training to measure things like increase in knowledge, change in practice, and then we also conduct focus groups with staff and interviews to touch base around things like reduction in stress, increased ability to advocate, how it impacts their caseload as well. So since our project has been put in place until May of 2013, we've reached over 300 Healthy Start and NFP program participants and their family members. So they're not all program participants, but we know that a lot of the legal services we do are touching the entire family. They're impacting the family dynamic. 187 legal cases were addressed, and 151 of those on-the-spot case consultations took place. And these are very important because it provides an opportunity for the staff to really increase their knowledge about substantive legal issues and about procedures in a way that they could apply maybe to a specific participant, but also use in other cases. So, for example, our attorneys help staff with form letters to landlords and helps staff understand some of the basic rules within our Department of Public Welfare, so the next time they encounter a challenge, they know what to say to that county assistance office worker. With collaboration through Widener University School of Law, we host two courses on medical legal partnership. One is based on disability law and MLP, the other is on poverty law and MLP, and we've trained about 38 students through that way. And we've conducted about 34 trainings with Crozier Keystone staff and other community partners. So this just gives you an idea of what our last grant cycle's legal issues looked like for the cases that were addressed. Public benefits were about half the matters. In Pennsylvania, where our project is located, we're having a really tough time with our Department of Public Welfare's policies around public benefits. In the summer of, I believe, 2011, about 90,000 kids were kicked off the Medicaid rolls due to not one good reason that I could find. So we do a lot of work around that. But you could see some of the other issues that folks are encountering are disability, housing, utility, custody matters. And one unique aspect about our project is we actually have a full-time attorney who's dedicated to consumer issues. And we define this broadly as anything having to do with money, so we would include public benefits with that. But we're also seeing some cases with things like student loan debt that are impacting folks, right? Lemon law issues around vehicles. A mom with 9 kids buys a van to take her kids to their medical appointments, and the van is a lemon, right? What legal recourse does she have? So he deals with matters like that. That might seem a bit attenuated to health, but when you really drill down to root causes and social determinants of health, it has a direct impact. So one of the things that we really focus on within our evaluation is this idea of stress. Our funding comes in annual increments. It's very difficult for us to design a longitudinal study to track these hard health outcomes like low birth rate and other issues. We're getting there. We want to get there. If there are any funders in the room, please talk to me after. In the meantime, we know the importance stress has on health. specifically in pregnancy. So we are following up with clients, and we ask them to rate their level of stress before and after receiving services on a scale from 0 to 10, 10 being extreme. We ask them to rate overall, but then we also drill down to have them report on specific legal issues, just to get a sense of what's taking priority, how that stress changes. So this past grant period, at the time that I collected the data, the average level of stress was 8.7 prior to receiving services and 3.6 after. I believe we have about an 86% aggregating the data over the last 3 years, 86% of the respondents have reported a reduction in stress. So it seems like this really is impacting folks in that way. And it's interesting to look at those individual legal matters. And on this chart, you could see with regard to public benefits, it's very high and then drops pretty low, right? However, if you compare that to a different legal issue like special education, you don't see quite the significant drop. And what I've come to realize by asking clients why was your stress impacted in this way is that matters that when the legal intervention ends and it's resolved quickly, like benefits are reinstated, it's an immediate impact, the stress relief comes. Something like special education, where perhaps the legal intervention is over, but you're still waiting on the school who may have broken promises in the past to follow up, you won't see that reduction, which I think makes sense, or it won't be quite as significant. We've had positive results, positive findings from staff. This is the director of our Healthy Start project, Joanne Craig. People love pictures, and I don't have enough photographs. I have to throw them in. But we have found that there's increase in knowledge, increased capacity to serve clients, increased capacity to advocate on behalf of clients, decreased staff stress, and an increased ability to identify and refer when folks have legal needs. We definitely face challenges, mostly around sustainability, evaluation, and health system investment, which, as you know, are all interconnected. We are working very hard to demonstrate our return on investment from a financial perspective, and some medical legal partnerships have been able to demonstrate that throughout the country. We know that dollars talk, right? And I'll end with client quotations because they are warm and fuzzy, and that's how presentations should end. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's have a round of applause for all of our presenters. We are at about 12 o'clock, time for the session to end. Perhaps if anyone has a question they'd like to ask, the presenters might be willing to just stay a moment. So would you take a question? Okay, sir.
Bob Grissom, the Institute of Social Medicine and Community Health. This last model that we just heard, is there any reason it couldn't be effectively incorporated into all healthcare providers' operations, hospitals, for example, since there are often underlying social causes of health problems that hospitals could, in a sense, be a prism focusing on the hospital admissions, a prism focusing on underlying social problems that need legal attention?
I cannot think of any reasons why that can't be the case. And I think that's the direction we want to move toward. And there are hospitals adapting the model and financially supporting it. However, the challenges that we encountered trying to get that buy-in from hospital administration was being able to demonstrate on the front end return on investment. And we can be creative on how much money we save the hospital, However, without having a partnership with the hospital's claims or billing department, it's much harder to do that. So what we are trying to propose is give us some demonstration money to show you return on investment, right? Because we could work within the billing department and identify folks who might have outstanding medical bills, see if they're eligible for Medicaid, see if they're eligible for retroactive Medicaid, and then show you the return on investment. But also, we would like to show return on investment in things like avoiding costly emergency room usage for folks who are uninsured and might not ever be insured, avoiding costly hospitalizations. Around birth outcomes, we know those are really costly services, and that's what we're trying to show is by doing this intervention, we might be reducing some of those really high costs when pregnant women run into trouble in giving birth. But no, I think that's the direction everyone that we want to move toward.
Organizations picking up the cost for the staff for the research, and it's really getting that medical and buy-in to kind of even out the resources that are able to sort of perpetuate the model. And a lot of that on the hospital ends is exactly it. They want to be an evidence base and they want to be metric. So right now it's sort of developing that research base to make that case.
I don't understand why ROI for hospitals is the critical issue. This is the condition of participation issue in Medicare.
Oh, I see. So you're saying at the federal level through Medicare and Medicaid that they should mandate this as a covered service. And you might know better than I do. I think our project through Healthy Start is right now might be the only federally funded medical legal partnership. So I do know, and I could be totally wrong about that. Direct federal dollars. So there are medical legal partnerships housed in health home models, but it's not a direct funding source, if that makes sense. Anyway, the takeaway is I do know parts of the federal government are starting to pay attention to this and are having demonstration projects to see if this is sustainable and viable and something. Now I think we have a lot of work to go before it would be a mandated service, especially with that federal state structure with Medicaid. But if you and I want to work on that together, I'd be happy to collaborate offline. And I'll
Thank
give you,
you
my
very
card.
Much. And I'm happy to speak around.